Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I am Meg, and my honey butter biscuit, Connie, is going to tell us about Pauline Parker and Juliet Hume.
All right, guys, we haven't had a trigger warning in a while, but this one is, I would just say, trigger warning is tiny little psychopathic children.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Not tiny. I shouldn't say tiny little because they're like 16. But to me, that's tiny now because we're old.
Crazy children alert.
Children
committing horrific crimes
against their parent.
Ugh. Man, we've been doing a lot of these lately.
I know. I had already written most of this when I did my other episode. And I was like, this is not... Not trying to be those people.
This is not the role you meant to be on.
Yeah, it's not the... But you know, like, once you get into, like, you just start going, and then that's, like, what...
Yeah, and it opens up, or you're reading about it, and then it, like, links you to another article about something.
Yeah, that's what happens, is, like, I found an article, and then another article, and then another article.
And they just keep coming, and they don't stop coming.
And here we are. Okay. Pauline Parker was born on May 26, 1938. She was the second daughter of Herbert and Honora Reaper. Pauline really had a tough go when she was a child. When she was five, she was hospitalized with osteomyelitis, which is a serious infection of the bone that can... causes like pain, and
it's your bone tissue that swells.
Yeah, and it can get to like your bloodstream, cause fractures. You have to have surgery, and so she had like a ton of procedures that were really painful. So she was left with chronic leg pain throughout childhood, and you know, I'm assuming into adulthood, and it was just like not a good time for her. She was unable to participate in a lot of physical activities because of her leg issue. And she also walked with a limp. Pauline came from a working class family. Her dad managed a fish shop. Her mom ran a boarding house. She liked to go by the name Paul, but because she liked it, I'm not going to call her that because she's not a good person. She really enjoyed art, writing, sculpture. Even though the family wasn't like together, they weren't very religious. Pauline and her older sister, Wendy, spent some time attending East Belt Methodist Church and often went on church organized outings and like vacations. It was at the Christ Church Girls High School where she met Juliet Hume and formed the friendship that was going to change her entire life. The Christ Church is in New Zealand, so this case is still one of the most prolific cases in New Zealand's history.
Okay.
Juliet was just a few months younger than Pauline, but they were in the same year at school. Juliet was born in England, and she had actually been hospitalized with tuberculosis as a child. And to tell you the difference in like family classes, she was sent to live in South Africa and the Caribbean while she was younger in the hopes that the warmer clients would help her tuberculosis. Her dad is actually quite famous. He is physicist Dr. Henry Rainsford Hume. He helped build the first British hydrogen bomb.
Oh, okay.
So when she was 13, her dad was appointed appointed rector at the University of Canterbury. So the family moved to Christchurch. And if you're one of our New Zealand listeners, and I'm saying that wrong, my apologies. The two girls on paper, outside from their illnesses, they came from polar opposite worlds. Like I said, Pauline came from a working class background, Juliet from a more privileged upbringing. And even physical appearance-wise, the two couldn't be more different. Juliet was very tall for her age, slender, very self-confident, and was described as being strikingly attractive. She spoke with what her classmates called a beautiful English accent. A classmate said that Juliet was anti-authoritarian, and she was known for like even correcting teachers when they spoke. And she said that she had a very posh English accent and would hold her head high as she walked. I was with a group of girls clowning around in a locker room, and she came to us and said, "Oh, you are all so very mid-Victorian."
Oh, okay.
Which that's
What's mid-Victorian mean?
I don't know, but I was like, that sounds mean. I'm going to start using it.
You're so mid-Victorian.
Maybe that's where the term mid came from.
I don't think that's it. But
that's what I'm going to tell people.
It is. I'm looking it up. It's old fashioned. It means old fashioned, prudish, morally strict, stuffy. So they were like
normal kids.
Well, I guess, yeah.
You guys are too
normal. I am definitely going to start calling people mid-Victorian when they're uptight, though. I'm like, that's awfully mid-Victorian of you.
I dig it. We give permission for all of our listeners to also start calling people mid-Victorian.
We're doing a thing. We're trying it.
It's like fetch, but it's going to catch on.
Quit trying to make fetch happen.
Pauline was half a head shorter than Juliet. She had dark, curly hair. She was shorter than most girls. She was described as, and it is the meanest description I have read in a long time, something of a misfit, less obviously attractive than Juliet, a tomboy with dumpy, boyish looks and a permanent angry scowl.
That is mean.
And the scowl is 100% correct, because when I post her mugshots later, you guys are going to be like, it is like the meanest face I've ever seen. She just looks like I would cross the street to stay away from this girl if she stared at me the way she looked in her mugshot.
Ugh.
And Pauline was very flattered to fall into Juliet's good graces. She instantly fell under Juliet's spell, and the two became inseparable. They bonded during gym class because they both had to sit out because Pauline had, you know, her leg issues and Juliet her tuberculosis. And the pair's friendship became pretty intense pretty quick. They really romanticized the idea of being sick, which I honestly feel like that's something you and I would do growing up.
We did kind of romanticize. We're like, oh, we're so sick. But we get to stay home from school and eat Burger King and do nothing.
The two girls really fired up each other's imaginations, and they soon created this fantasy world. They would spend hours making up stories. They renamed themselves Gina and Deborah. They made plans for a life of fame and fortune as actresses in America. And at first, both families were really happy that the two had each other. But as Pauline and Juliet literally became obsessed with each other, the prospective families became concerned. Pauline was spending all of her time with Juliet, holidays, weekends, after school, any free second she had, she was with Juliet. I get the vibe that Juliet's parents were way more welcoming of the friendship than Pauline's. The girls had an obsessive interest in opera and the movies. By January of 1954, they were writing novels. One of the novels Pauline wrote was called The Donkey's Serenade, and Juliet wrote one called The Beautiful Lady in Blue. And I also felt like that was a depiction of their personalities, you know?
Yeah.
They were convinced that they were amazing, astoundingly good opera singers. They would perform and write operas, and they made up their own religion. They had like a group of people they worshiped that they called the Saints, like Mario Lanza, Ava Gardner, Guy Rolfe.
Just good singers.
Good singers. They're like, these are, and they were literally like worshiping these celebrities. They decided that Hollywood was the place that they had to go because that's where their novels and their operas would be made into movies. And one of them would marry James Mason, and they would be friends with Marilyn Monroe. They would be friends with Ava Gardner. They decided that they could just work as sex workers because that would also help them make a good living while they are waiting for their novels to be made into movies.
They're like, let's just skip being a server. We'll go straight into sex work.
Mm-hmm. That's where the big bucks are.
All right.
In June of 1954, Pauline spent a week with Juliet. And the girls spent the nights enacting how each saint, so their list of saints, would make love in bed.
Oh.
So things were getting a little spicy.
Teenagers are strange.
So strange. And for the most part, I'm like, here for it. I'm like, do your thing, man. Do it. Not in this case. So this world that they made up, they called it the fourth world. And as time went on, they became more obsessed and more immersed in this imaginary realm and less tethered to reality. Pauline wrote of a bicycle ride in the country where they stopped in some bush, took off their clothes, ran through the bushes, and like, you know, just being, see, that to me is like normal teenage stuff, like whatever, do your thing. They became very conceited and arrogant. They believed that they were geniuses. No one else could understand how brilliant their minds were. No one understood how talented they were. Pauline wrote in her diary that we have an extra part of our brain which can appreciate the fourth world. But meanwhile, on 2 days a year, we may use the key to look into that beautiful world. They really were believing. It's like the people who like reality shift that I see on TikTok. It's it was like that type of situation.
This is giving me the Slender Man girl vibes.
Okay. I'm so glad that you said that because that is exactly like I have a note at the end like Slender Man, comma or question mark. Yeah, because that's what I thought too.
Well, their names like Anissa and Morgan or something. Like, it just sounds like they're enabling each other.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, the girls were torn apart when Juliet fell ill again with tuberculosis. She had to spend 3 months in the hospital. And while she was in the hospital, the two friends wrote all of the time, and they wrote as their respective characters. Both girls at this time, like, their parents were like, okay, maybe, not that we want Juliet to be sick, but maybe by this point, some time apart may, you know, cool it a little bit.
Yeah, like it would be better for you guys to not be spending so much time together.
Mm-hmm. Apart, Pauline started to sneak out at night to meet boys. One of the boys that she met, his name was Nicholas. He was boarding at the house. But as soon as Pauline found out that Juliet was coming home from the hospital, she was like, sorry, smell you later, Nicholas. This isn't working out. I'm done.
Gotta go hang out with my bestie.
As soon as Juliet got home, their friendship room, like, it picked up right where they left off, just as intense as ever. Very codependent. Pauline's mom actually had Juliet's dad come over at one point because she was so concerned with the codependence of the two. And she had taken Pauline to see a psychiatrist because she was so concerned with this. And the psychiatrist was like, hey, I'm just saying, I think these two girls are in a homosexual relationship. And now, I mean, it's in 2024, we're like, okay, no big deal, whatever. But this is 1954 in New Zealand. And at this time, homosexuality was considered a sign of mental illness and it was treated as a crime. So this psychiatrist telling Honora, who is Pauline's mom, hey, I think your daughter is in a homosexual relationship. It really panicked her. The two girls were living in their made-up fourth world so intensely that their parents could barely even talk to them because they were so engulfed in this fantasy world. And although this reality world that the two girls were living in seemed to be really working for them, a man named Walter Andrew Bowman Perry, and I know that is a mouthful, he came to town. Perry was an engineer. He was very charming. He was in town on a business visit, and like the Humes, he was interested in sociology. So he began working with Juliet's family, and they actually offered him an apartment to stay in. So Juliet was spending a lot of time with this guy, and, you know, they were all developing this friendship. Well, one day, Juliet walked in on her mom having an affair with Mr. Perry.
What?
The tea.
Juicy.
And I forgot how, not forgot, but it always is like astonishing to me how news articles were written back in like the 1950s, because after the crimes that, or the crime that was committed, they like threw Juliet's mom under the bus. They were like, she was very loose. She was,
and I was a woman of loose morals.
Yes. And even Pauline, like I said, she had an older sister named Wendy, who was just a year older than she was. But she had a brother that was born, and he was born with like physical deformities, and they called him a mongoloid. And they said that he was placed directly in a sanitarium. And I was like, ugh, that's so gross. But then I was like, it's the 50s. That's how they talk.
Yes.
But still, like, that's so fucking awful. So this affair is exposed, and it was no surprise, but Juliet's parents filed for, like, they were going to get a divorce.
Yeah, not a surprise.
And Dr. Hume, her dad, was like, look, I'm done with this. I'm moving back to England. I'm not going to stay in New Zealand anymore. He resigned from his job, and he was going to take Juliet and her brother Jonathan with him back to England. But her mom was like, look, her lungs are not good for like England winters. It's her lungs are not strong enough.
This is when they were like, move to the seaside. The air will be better for you there if you're ill.
Yeah, exactly. And Dr. Hume had a sister who lived in South Africa. So he was like, we're going to go to South Africa. That's what's going to happen. And her first response was, Pauline has to come with me.
You're like, no, that's not how childhood friendships work.
Well, what's crazy is the Humes were like, okay. And Honora was like, what the fuck? No. Like, no, yeah. She cannot move with you.
I'm also like, what the fuck? No. Like, what?
Okay. Exactly. I mean, we practically lived with each other, but if you were like, hey, I'm moving to California, my parents would have been like, sorry, Connie, like, you can go visit on breaks.
You can't move with her, though.
You're 15. You can't go. And Pauline's parents' biggest concern, and this is a direct quote, was that something embarrassing was happening between the girls. And that means like they were being accused of being homosexual.
That's so real, though, because my kids embarrass me all the time. And I'm like, this is a me thing. I'm triggered by this. I need to deal with my own emotions, but I do feel it. Not on like the homosexuality front, not that. Just like when I feel embarrassed. Yeah, I feel most like triggered by my children.
We'll talk about that at the end, because I have my oldest has started this new, like, very embarrassing thing, and I need the gruesome.
You need to vent.
Community to like weigh in and let me know if this is normal. But anyways, so at this point, Pauline believes that the only person who is the obstacle to her happiness is her mother. And she already hated her mom because she had got caught sneaking out and like been caught with boys. And her mom had made such a big deal about her relationship with Juliet. And so she just had so much animosity built up. But from what I read, it seems like Honora was more just concerned for her daughter. She just wanted, you know, things to go swimmingly in her teenage years.
Uh-huh.
So these two delusional monsters, emphasis on Pauline, decide that the only logical solution to make her mother denying the move, like the only solution to it, was to murder Honora. And they planned so, just like they planned everything in their diaries, in these books they were writing. They planned it like they were planning a vacation. You can tell by the journal entries how excited they were that this was about to happen. They wrote about it extensively. And so by now, it's June 1954, And they had written 6 books together, poems, operas, and tons of diary entries where they discuss, I should say, not 6 books about murdering Pauline's mom, but in total. And then also all of these diary entries about murdering Honora. And this started in as early as February. So the first diary entries start with just them talking about Pauline's mom dying. So on February 23rd, 1954, Pauline wrote, why could not mother die? Dozens, thousands of people are dying. Why not mother? And father too. Life is very hard. Which at first sounds like teenage angst. Like I remember being like, I wish I was an only child. I wish my siblings didn't exist. But then it just gets progressively like unhinged. In April, Pauline wrote, anger against mother boiling inside me as she is the main obstacle in my path. Suddenly, means of ridding myself of the obstacle occur to me. If she were to die, ... A month later, she wrote, Deborah, because Juliet was Deborah, Pauline was Gina. Deborah and I talked for some time. Afterwards, we discussed our plans for moitering because she would never write murder. She would write it in like...
like an old-timey criminal?
Yeah.
Like moiter him.
Exactly.
I'm going to moiter him. Moitalize him.
We discussed our plans for moitering mother and made them clear. But strangely enough, I have no qualms of conscience. Or is it peculiar? We are so made. And then on June 21st, she says, Deborah rang and we decided to use a brick in a stocking rather than a sandbag. Mother has fallen in with plans beautifully. Feel quite keyed up. And then the very next day, the final journal entry was, I felt very excited last night and sort of Nightmare Before Christmas-esque, but I did not have pleasant dreams. I am about to rise. And on the top of the page, it was written, the day of the happy event.
Can I make a digression?
Yeah.
She said Nightmare Before Christmas-esque, or you
night
wrote
before.
That?
Night before Christmas. No, okay. Not nightmare. Night before.
I thought you said nightmare, and I was like, was that a phrase before the movie? I misheard you. I'm sorry. Go on.
I may have missaid it because I'm so used to saying Nightmare Before Christmas.
Maybe. We'll have to go back and listen.
So the girls decided that the plan has to look like an accident. And their idea of it murdering Honora was... one good blow on the back of the head and she would die. And then they would roll her body down the bank and it would look as if she had fallen and hit her head. No one who was around would think twice about it. They'd be like, oh my gosh, yeah, she did fall so hard suddenly one time and died, because that's how things work. So on June 22nd, 1954, around 3 o'clock, this is the day that Pauline was describing as the day of the happy event. She and Juliet invited Honora Reaper, which we'll get to that, her last name issue. So Honora Parker at the time, out for a walk. So the three of them went to Victoria Park. They enjoyed afternoon tea, and then they set out to explore. Juliet ran along in front with her hand in her pocket. In Juliet's hands were brightly colored rocks. She scattered the pebbles along the walkway. And then Pauline, walking right by her mom, had half a brick, like in her pocket, she was holding half a brick. They put this brick in like an old stocking, very like 1950s, 1960s, like prison yard style.
Sounds like they're trying to be like old timey mobsters.
And so as Juliet like ran along and dropped these little rocks, when it was time for Pauline and her mom to get up there, Pauline's mom, Honora, saw like a pink rock on the walkway, bent down, and Pauline was like, look how pretty this is. So Honora bent down to pick it up for her daughter. And as she bent down, Pauline pulled the slingshot brick-filled stocking from her pocket and swung. The brick crashed into her mother's head and Honora collapsed. Pauline would later say it was at this moment that she wished it all hadn't happened. But instead, what not surprisingly to normal-minded people, is that one hit from a 16-year-old girl did not kill Honora.
Yeah, though that's not surprising at all.
So then they just kept, she kept hitting her with this brick. Juliet came back, knelt beside Honora, and she also. They were both, like, they were taking turns just pummeling her with this brick. Honora had 24 wounds in her face. The girls looked at each other and tried to, like, push her down to continue the rest of their plan to make it look like they fell. And literally, they thought that that would work. They ran out of the park yelling, "We were coming back along the track. Mummy tripped on a plank and hit her head when she landed. She kept falling and her head kept banging and bumping as she fell."
Yeah, that's not going to work.
No, and they honestly thought that it would. Juliet tried to, like, add details and be like, "Oh, I'll always remember her head banging." The lady that they ran up to, like, left to call her husband. And as she did, the girls just casually walked to a sink to wash the blood off themselves. When Kenneth Ritchie, the woman's husband, came to help out, he found Honora Parker under a tall pine tree by the track, laying on a bed of pine needles. And it was an extremely gruesome scene. The police took the girls away and the ambulance took Honora's body away. The doctors counted 45 separate wounds, like, in total.
Sheesh.
It wouldn't take long for investigators to be like, okay, this is not what happens when you fall.
Yeah, duh.
And when they went to Pauline's house, they found her diary.
Like, actually, it looks like you've been writing for the last several months about how you would maybe like to murder your mom.
Yeah, and then what a strange happening. Your mom is dead. 3 weeks later, a magistrate committed Pauline Parker and Juliet Hume for trial on a charge of having murdered Honora Mary Parker. Now, this is where it gets a little crazy, outside of the fact that they already had murdered Honora. During the trial, they found out that Pauline's parents never officially married. So that is why, and when originally they had everything as Reaper, because that was, like, their married name. But throughout everything, they had to go by Pauline Parker, because at the time, which I don't know if this has always been a thing or if it still is a thing, she couldn't... the kids couldn't have her dad Herbert's last name of Reaper because they weren't married. So they had to revert back to their name of Parker.
Yeah, I don't think that would be like that now, because, I mean, even when you have a kid, it still usually gets, like, unless the mom indicates otherwise, it usually gets the dad's last name, right?
Yeah. I like that you refer to a kid as it.
You don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl. Like, it's a baby. A baby usually gets its dad's last name unless otherwise indicated, as far as I understand it these days.
It was no surprise that the prosecutor went for an insanity defense. Or not the prosecutor, the defense went for an insanity defense. And they were like, hey, these girls are insane. They are delusional. They have a shared mental delusion. And the Crown prosecutor, his name was Alan Brown, he was like, okay, they are dirty-minded little girls. The motive for the murder arose from Mrs. Parker saying the girls could not move overseas together. Their friendship was one of intense devotion. They spent a good deal of time in each other's beds. They really played up this, the girls were lesbians, but... He was like, well, there is no evidence that anything physical happened. But that was, I feel like, just adding to them being like, look how dirty-minded they are.
Like, this is why they were able to do this.
They brought in all of these novels that the girls wrote, which were a little spicy. They brought in the diary. They brought in some poems that the girls wrote. And they said, the Crown prosecutor said, you may feel pity for these girls, but pity and sentiment have no part in British justice. I was like, dang, 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 dang. And Juliet had, like, they both confessed. And in her statement, she said, I gave the brick to Pauline. I know it was put in the stocking. I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen when we went to Victoria Park. I thought we might have to frighten Mrs. Reaper, because again, that's what they knew her as, with the brick, and then she would give her consent for me and Pauline to stay together. I saw Pauline hit her mother with the brick in the stocking. I took it and hit her too. After the first blow was struck, I knew it would be necessary for us to kill her. I was terrified, hysterical. And Pauline very callously just said, I killed my mother, had made up my mind to do it some days before. I don't know how many times I hit her, a great many, I imagine.
Yeesh. Man, I hope my kids never turn on me. That's all mm-hmm. I ever think. Mm-hmm. When I hear these, I'm just like, man, I hope my kids don't murder me one day.
The girls sat very cool, calm, collected. They just stared with like blank faces during the entire trial. Uh-huh. And when the defense was trying to argue insanity, they said, okay, one of them being insane, possibly, both of them, highly unlikely.
Unlikely.
And so in the final address to the jury, the Crown Prosecutor Brown literally just said, these girls are not incurably insane. They are incurably bad. And then he dropped the mic and left, because that is...
These girls ain't incurably insane. They just incurably bad.
The jury only deliberated for 2 hours and 13 minutes. When the girls returned to the courtroom, they smiled and laughed. They just acted like it was no big deal. No surprise, they were both found guilty. Guess how much time they spent in prison?
Zero.
Practically.
Well, how much? Tell me.
5 years.
5 years.
Because they are under 18, so they weren't eligible, or, you know, they weren't
able to. You know if they ever repeat offended? Did they ever do anything else?
Honey, do I have some tea for you about what these little bitches were up to after they got out? Part of their sentence was that they could never speak to each other again, which made placing them in their jail prisons very difficult, because there were not very many, like,
teen girl prisons.
Exactly. So Pauline was sent to Arohata Borstal near Wellington, and Juliet was sent to Mount Eden, which is like this grim prison in Auckland where all of New Zealand's hangings would take place. Ooh. So part of her, she would just sit and sew uniforms all day. What's even crazier is, because Pauline mom, Honora, and Herbert, her dad, were not married, her estate passed to her children. So, all of her, like, estate, like, all of her belongings, life insurance, you know, the whole shebang, whatever they called it in the 1950s, her dad was not entitled to it because they were not married.
Oh, so the kids got it.
Yeah. So,
did they have more than just her?
They had Pauline, and she had an older sister named Wendy, who was a year older. She was 17 when her mom was murdered.
By her sister. Ugh, gross.
Pauline and Juliet were both released from prison in November of 1959, because their sentences were not like, you're sentenced to 5 years. It was like an undetermined amount of time. So kind of like, when you prove yourself, we'll let you out.
It's just like, if you're like good behavior, you get out on good behavior.
Each of them, they were both given new identities to help them make a fresh start. And at the time, both of them disappeared from public view. So in 1994, a reporter found Juliet because a movie named Beautiful Creatures was released. It's a Peter Jackson film. It had Kate Winslet and Melanie
Vanessa Hudgens, right?
No.
Beautiful Creatures?
No, that's a way different.
Oh, that is a different one.
This is 1994,
yeah.
Honey. You're welcome. Oh,
okay.
Melanie Linsky is in it. So, which is actually.
I was just talking about her.
Yeah, she was. The movie actually portrayed them as having like a homosexual relationship.
Okay, so the movie Beautiful Creatures was based on this murder.
Yeah, so, yeah, and it came out in 1994. And so in July of 1994, a journalist discovered that the well-known crime novelist Anne Perry, who lived in the Scottish Highlands, was in an earlier life, Juliet Hume. So what? Juliet, after she got out of prison, became like a well-known true crime novelist.
People can change.
And she sold more than 25 million books.
Good for her. That's crazy.
The discovery that Anne Perry wrote from a personal experience as a murderer really helped her sales. And she actually has given numerous interviews over the years, also like promoting her books. In 2006, Amanda Cable interviewed her with the Daily Mail, and she asked the now Anne Perry if she ever thought back to the murder. And this is how I know she's not a good person, and I apologize if anyone's like, oh, redemption. She said, no, I would just torment myself, and that wouldn't help anyone. And then she was like, do you ever think about your victim? She's like, no, she was somebody I barely knew.
Sheesh. Okay, it was Heavenly Creatures.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful Creatures came out in the 2000s. And Heavenly, I was like, that does not sound
cut. Yeah, there's a Beautiful Creatures that came out in 2013, I think.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Heavenly Creatures came out in 94. Gotcha.
Oh, Beautiful Creatures is like the 2013 version is like a way different. Ethan Waite longs to escape a small southern town. He meets a mysterious new girl. Together, they uncover dark secrets about their family's history. That is not to be confused with the 1994 version of Beautiful Creatures, because those are vastly different. Vastly different. But anyways, Pauline Parker became Hillary Nathan. She lives less than 100 miles from Anne Perry. No one knows. Are they actually, you know, do they still talk? Do they, you know, no one knows. It's a big mystery around that. But after she was released, she got her bachelor.
You said they live in Europe now?
Scotland, yeah.
And they both happen to live in Scotland. That's wild.
Mm-hmm. Less than 100 miles from each other. Randomly. I'm sure like no planning was there. She got her degree at the University of Auckland. She graduated in 1964. Some of her colleagues have described her as mysterious and secretive.
Yeah, I wonder why.
She didn't come to school the day they took the class photo. She did not let anyone know who she was. But again, journalists be journalists and doing journalistic things, and they found her. They're like, bitch, you can't hide from us.
Find you.
Mm-hmm. No one knows why she chose the name that she did, but she just became like a devout Roman Catholic, and some believe that it's like a biblical significance.
Oh.
Juliet actually died 1 year ago exactly at the age of 84, and Pauline, unfortunately, is still kicking. Or maybe she's not. No one knows because she's such a recluse. Her sister, Wendy, because a journalist tracked Pauline down as well, and she wouldn't like talk to them. But her sister,
I'm not saying that what they did isn't wrong, but it sounds like they both reformed. And ideally, that's what we want, right? Like,
yeah, that is what we want. It's weird to me. And I think this comes from like a very American mindset. Like, I cannot imagine getting anyone. I mean, I know it happens, but when it comes to a murder of that caliber and that brutality and that like publicized, I don't see a jury being like, oh yeah, honey, 5 years and you can be free.
Yeah. It's different here for sure. It would be like,
But again, they were 16-year-old white women, so maybe it would. Maybe they would have been out in 5 years.
You know, like, I know we've done cases with kids before where I'm like, my hope is always that they reform, right? Right.
I think what
we don't want to give them a second chance, but they deserve it most of the time, I think.
I think what like changes my opinion on whether on their second chances is I read a lot of the like psychiatrist interviews from even after the trial, and they did not show remorse. There was not 1 ounce of remorse that came from either of them. So I
like, can we just forget this and move on?
Yeah. So I don't even know if it's more, I think it's just well, okay, that's done. Let's do something.
It's just like, let's pretend like this didn't happen.
Exactly. And that's so awful. Like, her sister Wendy said that she lives the straight and narrow life. Like, she, like I said, she recluses. She doesn't really do anything. She's actually a writing instructor for children. Or she was, like, back in the day. I don't think it.
So they both became, they both became writers?
No, a writing instructor, like horses.
Oh, a writing. Okay. So you said writing, and which I was like, oh, like, they're both authors. That's interesting.
Which is another, like, kind of weird thing, her becoming a writing instructor, because Juliet had a horse, and Pauline, as they, like, when they were kids, like, they, Pauline really wanted one. So Pauline saved up money, and her parents were like, no, like, we cannot afford a horse. Like, we don't even know, like, that can't happen. So Pauline saved up her money and bought one and hid it from her parents. And then when her parents found it, they were like, okay,
you can keep it. Well, I mean, it makes sense that she became like a novelist and an author, because they were writing. I mean,
yeah, that's
writing
what,
a lot.
That's what someone, I had read like an article, and that's what they said. Like, at least one of them is living out their dream, or lived out their dream. I have not read any Anne Perry novels, but now I'm going to.
It looks like they're historical detective fiction. Maybe that's why she kept writing Moida.
Moida.
I'm going to Moida, yeah.
Do you think that they never had contact again?
No. I think if they, especially because they live in the same area, I think they probably stayed in contact. Also, like, they went through that together. They probably found some kind of solace in that.
And I think that it was only, they were so codependent and so entwined that I don't see 5 years changing that.
And it, I just looked at it. It said she never married.
Nope.
And she said she cut off relationships rather than risk revealing her past. That's fair.
But crazy.
That is crazy. Wild. They, I mean, they're never fun, but that one was full of twists and turns I didn't expect. And yes, their connection did remind me of the Slender Man girls.
Yeah, yeah. I had, like I said, I didn't know about that, because it was like, oof. But you, that's that frontal lobe not being developed. And I'm not making excuses, because it is horrific and heinous. And I say the same thing every time we have cases that involve children killing their parents. It is fucking awful. And when they're teenagers, their brains are literally not developed all the way. Like, their frontal lobe is not where it should be. And so they do, I mean, it is like rational, like irrational things that happen. Sometimes it's, you know, I'm going to run away from home, blah, 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 blah. Sometimes you're just fucking batshit and you kill your parents, or you kill, you know, your mom. But
yeah, there's plenty of kids with frontal lobes that aren't fully developed that don't kill their parents.
There's the majority.
Almost all of them, actually.
9% of them do not kill their parents. But I also think they lived such, they lived in this imaginary world of, like, self-inflated grandeur, where they're like, we are the best. No one.
Well, you said they were kind of codependent and enabling each other. Oof, gross.
I got to show you their mugshots, though, because they are chills.
I would love to see their mugshots.
Actually, I'm going to show you real quick. As I'm doing this, have you seen, okay, this one is Pauline. Have you seen, oh, I guess I can't do a picture. This guy named Switch.
What?
Have you seen this? His name is Switch. He's some YouTuber, but he does this thing where he, like, points up his middle or pointer finger, and he's like, "What's up, brother? Have you seen this?"
I haven't.
It's like all over TikTok right now.
I saw a reel about it. Yeah, I haven't seen where it comes from, but I have seen people, like, make, like, reels or TikToks about it.
My son has been doing it, and it is secondhand embarrassment. I know that they don't care, but he does this thing where he's like, Tuesday. And he says, like, all these things. And that's all I heard. He had a soccer game today after I got off work. And that is all I heard. The whole fucking game was them, like, flapping their arms like eagles, being like, Tuesday, Tuesday. Whoa. And I'm like, I don't even know what's happening.
I don't know what that means either. But
you'll have to see it. Now that I've talked about it, you'll see it on your like reels and TikTok.
And it'll pop up all over the place. It'll follow me.
Well,
that sounds exciting. I can't wait.
But I started thinking, because he was talking about all of these like terms that they use, and he told me that he has a friend that's a little zesty. And I was like, what the fuck does zesty mean? But it's like flamboyant, like very out there. And he's like, yeah, you know. And then he like referred to my youngest son. He's like, he's a little zesty too. You know, he just does his own thing. He's like out there. And I was like,
I kind of like zesty.
I was like, I don't know if that's like a slur.
I don't think zesty is a slur for people who do their own thing.
It's just
descriptive. And honestly, I'm glad to be on the up and up. I like to know the hip new thing.
I thought he was trying to call him gay. Like, oh, you're zesty. Like, as like a derogatory thing. Because like he is 13 and...
Yeah, but it just seems different.
Yeah. And I was like, did you just call your brother gay? And... He was like, no, Ma, what? No. And I was like,
care about that anymore.
Yeah, he's like, weird. You're the one that's weird, Mom. Like, it's not even a big deal. And I was like, I know it's not a big deal. I know being gay is not a big deal. I was just asking.
I was just making sure you knew.
Yeah, you little shit. But he told me that I was just old. He's like, Mom, you're just like getting a little old. Like, you don't know. All like what we say. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, like, obviously.
Cool, cool, cool. Just a little old, huh? Nothing to see here.
And then I started thinking, because like they're just repeating what this guy says in his videos. And I was like, in my head at first, it's like, I never did anything that weird. And then I was like, oh my God, we spent a whole year just randomly saying Anchorman quotes.
For like the last 3 days, I've been walking around going, the human torch was denied a bank loan.
Yeah. And then I was thinking about, remember all those G.I. Joe dubs that we used to watch?
Oh, pork chop sandwiches.
Pork chop sandwiches. I still
say. Who wants a body massage? Yeah. All the time. You know what my favorite one is? It's easy as a stamp. Lick it, stick it. See you later. Bye.
Oh my God, you had that in your MySpace header for a while.
I loved it. I loved them. And then, oh man, there's so many good ones. It's like, we walks in, he's like, it's a fire. Get the fuck out of here. What are you? Get the fuck out.
Do you remember when we had like a snow day for like a solid week and we just went to like Kemp's house and that's all we watched were like, we watched
the G.I. Joe PSAs, yeah. Dubbed PSAs.
And we played spoons. And he asked me, well, what did you guys do? Like, when you were in high school, what did you do? I was like, look, bro, I'm going to be honest. I'm not really the person to ask because, one, some of the stuff I did was highly illegal. And two, I was a fucking dork. And
he's like, I was very boring. I did stuff that I thought was cool.
I was like, we used to get together once a week on the tennis courts and play dodgeball as teenagers. And it was like a huge thing.
Dude, that was so fun.
I miss that time. And then we'd have like family game night where it was just like all of us getting together.
Yeah, it was
like board games.
Mm-hmm.
Simple real times.
We did other stuff that was illegal, but most of it was pretty wholesome if you think about it.
It really was. Like, remember we had our two gangs?
Yeah. Oh, I recall.
J Street Mafia and HC Ballas.
I forgot about the other one. But when we were house shopping, we went down Jefferson Street and I explained that story that we had pocket knives with it written on there. And my boyfriend looked at me and was like, you're a dork. Like, that's lame. And I was like, I know.
We spent a whole week of a summer just driving around on DeBoard's grandma's Jassy.
Dude, that was fun. Those things, like when I get old enough for it to look legit that I need one, I'm going to get one.
Dude, for sure.
I'm rolling in a rascal. Sure. No questions asked.
For sure.
Man, that was next to teenagers and be like, want to race?
I think about all of the things we could have been doing, like hard drugs. And we were just doing light. We were doing diet illegal things.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It was we were just being teenagers. You know what we weren't doing? Murdering our moms.
Yeah, exactly.
We were making other bad decisions that didn't involve murder.
No. I robo-tripped a couple times, and that was wild. But
you know, I always knew it as being called robo-tripping as well, but someone explained to me that that's just lean.
Like sipping on scissorp?
Yeah, like that's what lean is.
Shut up. I remember I drank it in a 7-Eleven slushie, and it was the worst time of my life.
Yeah, that's lean. And I spit in it's not uncommon.
I spent an entire night talking to this guy, and I was convinced we were on the hills. Like, that was the vibe in my head. It was wild.
Like the show?
Yeah. Like
I wanted that story to end, like, and at the end of the night, I realized it was a refrigerator. Like,
no, that's more like the first time I did shrooms.
The first time I did shrooms, I always tell the story because I just remember it so vividly. I'm not a big fan of my feet. I'll just say that. Like, I think they're not my favorite. I just don't always like the way they look. I'm okay with it now. But especially when I was younger, I was like weird about it. And I remember sitting in on my couch and my feet were kind of like draped over the edge of the couch. And I started looking at them and I just thought, like, these are the most beautiful feet I've ever seen in my life.
You're like, what? Someone would pay money for these.
Yeah, I was like, what have I been thinking? Like, I have great feet. And then I started laughing at how ridiculous it was. And then I started crying because I couldn't remember why I was laughing. And that was...
Have you ever tripped on mushrooms where it starts off as a really good time and then you think you're coming down and it comes back a second time and it's not as fun?
No.
Oof. Speaking from experience, not a good time.
I've heard that it can get weird. I have not had that experience.
I had an experience where my husband, his snoring really threw me off. And I thought that he was, like, not real.
Dude, you sent me that video of him snoring the other night, and it's not real. That snoring is unreal. Like, no jury would blame you if you murdered him in his sleep. Like,
oh my god,
straight up, they would be like, dude, us too.
It's been so bad, and it's gotten to the point, like, I just ordered my loops. Shout out to Meg for giving me the idea. But I just ordered my loops, and they'll be here tomorrow. But I cannot.
I thought he had a CPAP.
He fucking does, man.
Was he wearing it?
No, just sitting there like some dumbass.
He's just like, man, this is really helping me breathe. Better take it off.
I think he needs to have his septum repaired because he says like he feels like he can't breathe with it. But all I know is when I woke him up that night when I sent you that video, he dead ass looked at me and I was like, I can't sleep like this. And then he was like, are you going to go to the couch? And I looked at him and was like, uh-uh. And I just pointed, like
get out of here.
You're the reason. And then the whole next day, which I had slept okay.
Dude, I would put a tent in the backyard and be like, that's your bedroom now.
Dude, when we went camping and I was in that tin cardboard box of a camper, I'm like, people can hear you outside. Put a pillow over your face. And I always try to be nice at first. I'm like, hey, babe, you're snoring. And then I get to the point where I just make giant movements, like elbow him in the back. So he wakes up and I get like 5 minutes of peace before he starts sawing logs again. Guys, I thought it was a dead dog. Like, I thought there was a dog whining. Like,
it sounds like something dying for sure.
Yeah.
It was just like.
He sounds like a kazoo.
It's like, awful.
Fucking kazoo all night.
Mm-mm. I couldn't live like that.
A kazoo. Jesus. Ugh. Like,
It's like the biggest kazoo I've ever seen in my life.
That's what I'm going to start calling them. You are the biggest kazoo I've ever seen in my entire life. But I think that's a good spot to stop because we got another episode.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Gruesome, Horrific, True Crime.
We love you, beautiful strangers. And if you love us too, here are some ways that you can support Gruesome. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. This helps other true crime connoisseurs find us. Follow us at Gruesome Podcasts on Instagram or TikTok and talk to us on our posts.
Join the Patreon. Sign up to join our True Crime Sticker of the Month Club and gain access to bonus episodes and exclusive Patreon perks. Or if a one-time donation is more your thing, we have a Venmo at Gruesome Podcast and a PayPal via our email, gruesomepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from you. It seriously makes our whole life. So send us your questions, comments, suggestions, or just ask our opinion on whether that person you met on Tinder is a serial killer or not.
Tune in next week, and don't forget, lock your windows, lock your doors, and on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.